Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV. This is Brian here with Paul, Kathleen, Luke, and Jimmy. And today we're going to be covering episode 8 of the new Netflix original series, Shadow and Bone. And obviously, guys, this is the finale. But I think they stuck the landing of season 1 and did a very good job getting me excited for season 2. There's a lot of loose ends. Personally, I was ecstatic that the Darkling was not killed off. Big reveal, but that was something that I was really worried about because I came to really love him as an antagonist. And that was our final scene, was him confirmation that he's good. So I'm super excited for the next season. I loved season 1, completely unexpected.
And by good, you mean evil as fuck, but alive.
Yes, correct.
Yeah, still hot though. So even more hot with the slashes on his face.
I was going to say he's got some scars on his face now.
Hot. Hot boy.
I definitely like this episode a lot. No mourners, right? That was off of Inez's thing. There were no mourners, right? We pretty much everyone lived. And I did ask that question at the end of last podcast. I don't think any of us really thought Kerrigan wasn't making it out of this alive. Like the first death, even though that was a cool scene, I didn't for a second think he wasn't going to be the extra credit scene, and he exactly was, and that scene was fucking awesome. But as for the episode itself, there was a couple of things I thought didn't hit completely with me, but overall, everything that happened and where we were at the beginning to where we were at the end of the episode and how we are leading into the next season, I thought was all good. I'm still really excited to watch season 2, so I think it was a win.
Yeah, I got to agree 100%. I think everything they did with the characters, the writing for them was well done. But we said a little bit, maybe the execution on the episode was slightly off for some of those, you know, high moment scenes and like high tense scenes. But overall, it's a phenomenal show. Crazy how much they packed into only 8 episodes.
Yeah, I think you guys both nailed it. There was a couple things that I definitely want to talk about, and I'm sure we'll get into it. But otherwise, Brian, you got us into the show out of nowhere, and I'm so happy that we're doing it, man. It was so fun. It's been really fun talking with all the Facebook groups, Reddit groups. It's made this journey even better, and I've really enjoyed this first season.
Yeah, it's lit. I'm like, anything with fucking relationships is my favorite, and this episode was like oozing with good saves and friendship, new friendships, old friendships. I loved it. So yeah, let's get into it.
So we have 2 storylines going on here. Pretty much all of our main characters are on this skiff in the fold. That's the meat of this episode. But we also have Nina and Matthias. So they have like a couple really quick scenes. I think we're in agreement. We just want to bang those out really quick. So let's start with Nina and Matthias. When we first see them, they are kind of arriving in this small, I guess it's a town in Fjordan. I think it's right on the Rafkin border up north, but it's this small village called Arkesk. And Matthias is like, all right, this is where we part ways. Like, you'll be safe here. I'll just go north in the night. And they start talking. They're like, well, what if we could be together? What if we just like did the damn thing and, you know, kissed our old lives goodbye? I thought this was a really nice scene. Lots of growth for both of them. Nina turning her back on the Grisha, and Matthias just saying, fuck the Druskella. Like, I love this chick.
Yeah, he's now classified as a deserter, as we find out. And she will also be known as a traitor to Algrisha if they decided to run away together.
I guess technically with what happens, she's definitely a traitor because of what she does, but he could get away with not being a traitor right now, right?
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah.
So my whole thing, every time we see Nina on the screen, if you look at each scene individually, it's all fine. Like, nothing, I don't really have an issue with it. And I brought this up multiple times. I do still really believe this plot feels so just removed from the main characters until, of course, the last scene with Nina on the ship with the crows.
Which I loved.
Yeah, that's all fine. But they could have just taken like the 8 or 9 scenes we got throughout the season and really kind of done it in like 10 minutes. It just felt like we were dragging this out just to add another character. And I like Nina. I think she's great. We get to see a heart render that has a sort of moral standpoint, not even moral, but just someone we can like and not hate, who's just under Kerrigan. But overall, I just felt it just kept pulling away from the momentum of the main characters. But this scene specifically just feels like the predictable conclusion that we were heading to, where they were obviously going to want to be together.
Yeah, so I would really be interested to hear from some of the Facebook and Reddit people that listen to this podcast about how Nina applies to the books, as spoiler-free as you can do it for us, because I have no idea if she's a main part of Alina and Mao's story from the start, or if she's kind of being thrown in there just like the crows are, to give her a little bit of a backstory before, you know, you start really getting into it later with another story that she has.
So I got you. I did do a little digging on this. And after I watched the finale, I always go crazy with looking what people said about it. And apparently Nina is a very crucial character to the Crow storyline.
Okay.
And we brought this up before when we talked about the idea that Alina and the Crows are two separate books in the Grishaverse, mm-hmm. and they kind of put them all together here. And another thing I don't really know from firsthand experience, but apparently this is all supposed to take place. It's about 2 years before the real Crow story begins.
Right.
So this is all kind of built up to just to make Nina a main part of their story. And that's fine, again, but it just didn't feel it was warranted to have all the screen time that it got for me.
Okay, so she's actually not part of Alina's story for the most part.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool. I did see that the Crows stuff that they're doing right now on Netflix is technically like a prequel, like you said, to their actual story.
And another thing I picked up from, like, source material wise is, I think, and I again could be very wrong about this, when it does pick up the story of the Crows, the book, I think Kaz is supposed to be like way richer than he is, because people were commenting on the fact that he was willing to do all this for a million Kruga, whatever. And they were kind of scoffing at that, saying like, he would never fucking do that in the books.
Yeah, I did see that he is supposed to be way more experienced and distinguished as a thief mm-hmm. in the actual books. And I did see a lot of people commenting that it's fine because it's a prequel and that this is his journey to getting to where he's supposed to be in the books. But because a lot of people were actually a little bit thrown off by how he wasn't just straight up the man, you know, I mean, I thought he was the man, to be honest, but like a pure pro where nothing's going wrong, I guess. And he's just like the king of the barrel instead of the bastard of the barrel.
For the sake of the show, that's one of my favorite parts of the character, how he's kind of like going at everything he does with a chip on his shoulder, how he's the clear number two behind Pekka Rollins in terms of, mm-hmm. I don't know, who runs the city of Ketterdam. But that's I like that part of the character. And it makes sense if all the Crow stuff that we're seeing right now is non-canon. So they can do whatever the fuck they want and make Kaz this guy on the come up.
Yep.
I like it too.
But to go back to Nina and Matthias, you know, they go downstairs to the pub, eat some waffles, and then who enters but Fedyor with his squad of Grisha sent by Kerrigan. They have this encounter wherein Nina says that Matthias was a slaver just so that the Grisha won't kill him. And then these slave people whip out guns and have a stand up. Go ahead, Paul.
So that was one of the big questions I had for this episode, which I don't really get. So Nina goes down, it's all clear. Matthias comes down, they're sitting down, they're eating their waffles, and you can see Matthias start to freak out, and, you know, subtitles are saying his heart is beating rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
She, like, doesn't hear it at all. She's like, what's wrong? Like, what's going on? Like you have to be consciously, like, listening and trying hard to, like,
I mean, well, yeah, I would say so. It's like you're an inferno. You're not just on fire all the time, you know?
Okay.
I took it like she was hearing his heartbeat and she was looking around like who's doing it, because she couldn't see who was doing it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I could get that too.
She definitely asked what's wrong, though.
Yeah, but can we also talk about the fact that there's a full room of Grisha and she looked down to check if the coast was clear and she didn't look in that room or something?
I think I got there after.
Yeah, they could have wandered in, because they got down, they ordered their waffles, they were served their waffles, they were chowing down on the waffles. That's a good, like, 10-minute window for Fedyor and his goons to come in.
All right, fine.
Luke, just to add, like, for the record, I think Matthias is stupid. I don't care about him. But Nina, I really care about. Mm-hmm. For some reason, I kind of agree with you that it felt completely separated the whole time, but I kind of liked that we got some world building with, like, oh, we're hunting slavers now. It's like 20K ahead, basically. Like, that was stuff I wasn't thinking about prior. Like, I know there was always a Grisha versus not battle, but I don't know. I thought that these scenes gave, like, a common people almost, like, view of it, because we're so focused on the Crows and almost royalty with, like, General Kerrigan and all those, like, higher up Grishas like Zoya. But honestly, to me, sometimes I kept forgetting that Nina was a Grisha, even though they kept reminding us. But when at the very end when they were like, we need a heart render and her like ears perked up, I'm like, oh fuck. Like I kept forgetting for some reason. So I don't know. It was kind of nice. I think I liked it, but I guess I don't really have a specific reason.
Yeah, anyway. That's actually pretty interesting now that you gave us some background, Luke, because the fact that she was supposed to be working for Kerrigan, I feel like that has to come up again at some point.
Well, that's why Ivan was like, the fuck's up, dude? That was Ivan, right?
I mean, I guess
that was Fedor.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that kind of does answer that question. I mean, they just had that little throwdown and then she leaves. There she is. She's a traitor to them and you don't really have to talk about it much again. But it is a interesting choice to make her siding with Kerrigan and, you know, being his spy or whatever, or getting information for him, if really her story has to do with the crows. Mm-hmm.
That was sweet how they were just at the standoff and that random old guy was like, dude, you are already at war with another country. Do you really want to be at war with us? And then Fedor was like, ah, shit, you're right. So, you know, they grab Matthias, handcuff him, throw him in the brig, and Nina just tags along. Fedor's like, hey, happy sailing. F you.
I think we can call it on that until we get back to her at the end.
The only thing I want to say is there's no way that all five of us aren't choosing to be a heart render, right? Like, I guess take Kerrigan and Alina out of it. Like, you want to be a heart render. How fucking amazing.
Yeah, Taylor would be nice, but yeah, a heart render would be sick. Yeah. Or a healer would be
being
really
able
nice
to, I mean, if you're in war, like, being able to stop somebody's fucking heart.
Yeah.
That was actually something I want to bring up later. Yeah, the heart render battles.
Yeah. All right, let's take us back, B-Toms, to the fold.
Oh, yeah. So into the meat of the story, we are picking up right where we left off last episode. This skiff is going right into the fold and everyone is on board at this point in time. Like every character that we really care about, minus Nina, is on board right now. There are only like five markers in when the crows head downstairs below deck to start conspiring against Kerrigan because they got to come up with a game plan. They really don't know what their play is going to be. The Volkers start to kind of stir outside and, you know, we get this reminder that Kerrigan is in charge of Alina's powers right now.
So it was cool seeing all the crows just kind of run down to the bottom of the ship. I don't know what that's called, the lower deck. And, you know, they're freaking out. Jesper's like, this is ridiculous. This is a bad idea. We're on a ship where, like, the king wants us dead and we're surrounded by things that want to eat us. Like, what the hell are we doing? I should have brought Milo.
Yeah, damn right.
And just like, who? The goat. Come on. Yeah. And B-Toms, just to go back, you said everybody we care about besides Nina, everyone we care about besides Nina and Milo are not on the ship.
And Milo.
Miss Affin.
And yeah.
And Miss and Miss Affin.
Oh, yeah, Jenya.
Do you still care about Jenya?
Yeah, I was gonna say.
I sure do.
Why?
Yeah, have you seen her face?
Wow, okay.
We also
you care about Zoya? She's got a nice face.
I do now.
Well, I guess we
after
do now.
After this episode, I have got some loyalties to her, too.
That's another thing I definitely want to talk about.
Jimmy, I think me and you are going to pick apart all the same shit. we'll save that for later.
Yeah.
That was one of the things I was just going to say, though, is speaking of Zoya, we do find out that she is up top. She is the squaller, and there's also one of Kerrigan's guards with her, who we later find out is also a heart render.
And we find out about Zoya's family, right?
That's a little bit later. Maybe it's a little bit later. Yeah. Whatever. She just says, you know, as soon as we dock, I'm going to see my aunt.
Oh, we get her orders. Is what it
Novokhabirsk.
Orders to stop.
To make sure that there's an audience.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it was nice to humanize Zoya a bit, give her some family. Literally just the sentence that she has family somewhere humanized her for me. I was like, oh, okay, good for her. Isn't that crazy?
I think this is a good time to actually bring up on Reddit. Someone corrected us from a couple podcast episodes ago when I brought up that she was being racist to Inej when she was being the acrobat. Do you guys remember that?
Mm-hmm.
So actually what happened was when they're walking up the stairs, Inej is doing her little routine, the acrobat routine, and the person walking up with Zoya was being racist to Inej, and they're the same race, Inej and Zoya. Zoya's half, and that was actually Zoya backing Inej up.
Sully?
Yeah, so I was actually thinking Sully. She was being racist towards Inej, but really it was the other person being racist. So the person on Reddit told us that, yeah, she's racist against Alina, but she was helping Inej because she was half Sully.
So we love it. Please set us straight.
For Zoya.
So technically, it's a good look because she's defending her own, but she's still racist against shoes. Yeah. So
I was going to say that lowers the Zoya hate bar like a half a tick. So.
Just for the record, we love when people correct Jimmy because he's a real piece of shit. So please just correct him every time he fucks up, please. Actually.
Oh, yeah. I love it.
No, but actually, we do love that. Thank you. Please correct us.
Yes. Yes.
100%.
So now's when the Vulcra are showing up, right?
Yeah, they begin to like circle, but become visible to people like even through the fold. And Jimmy, this every time we go into the fold, I kind of get upset that it's not darker in the fold because you said in the books it's supposed to be pitch darkness. And I guess that wouldn't translate to the screen. But episode one, I was terrified of the fold. This episode, I was just like, oh, this is nothing. Like, everybody felt very safe this episode, which kind of upset me.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, they did pretty well at making some of the cast members looking very nervous and stuff, but I don't know if it was by design because Alina is supposed to be protecting them, but I didn't feel any I didn't feel scared for them. I didn't feel like there's gonna be any big problem. Saying it was way more ominous in the first episode for me.
Definitely was. And just like the individual standoffs that we're gonna get into in a minute here just didn't, it just felt like they were just trying to raise the tension for TV's sake instead of making it make sense. But yeah, I mean, that's just nitpicking. I still think it was fine. And Alina was there, but there were some things that could have been done better here, especially with giving some more kills to someone named would have been nice here.
Right.
So this is where we get Kerrigan kind of hijack her powers and use it to carve out this light tunnel, like all the way to the other side of the fold. So Kerrigan is very in control of this light power. Like, he knows what he's doing when he's using Alina's power. And then we go below deck to Kaz, and Kaz is just trying to work it out. He's like, okay, let's consider the scenario. Like, the Sun Summoner left the palace, and now she's tied to the deck. We're sailing to a city where another Rafkin general hired the conductor to kill Alina. And, you know, I saw Kerrigan's face. He's consumed with vengeance. So, like, what is our play here? And he says, you know, Alina is the key. Whoever controls Alina gets to call the shots on this skiff. So I think we need to threaten her life so we can just get control of the situation. Meanwhile, Mal is eavesdropping and Inej just walks away and, you know, sniffs him out easily.
Yeah.
And I really like this scene, how everyone just decides, okay, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. If he's not with Kerrigan, then he's with us, you know. Crow in training, if you will.
I love that. I really love that.
If he isn't with Kerrigan's crew, he's with ours. That's so good. That's so nice.
Yeah, and Brian, I totally agree with what Kaz was saying. It's actually really smart. The only way to gain leverage is control the most valuable thing, which right now is Alina. I mean, both sides want her. And as soon as Inej walked off screen, I was like, all right, she's just going to get Mal. Like, of course, like she heard something. She heard like a small little creak in the floorboards and went over to grab him.
She's incredible.
He also announces himself with such conviction. He's like, my name's Malian Oretsev. I'm here to kill the general. And they're like, wow, boy, what a coincidence. Like, are we glad we ran into you? Give this guy his gun.
I fucking love Mal and that whole interaction. Like, I had to write it down because it was so good. You know, why are you here? To kill the general and save Alina. I'll ask again, who are you, Mal? Do you know Alina? I do. Who controls her powers? The general I'm about to kill. And Nej, give him his gun. Like, it was just so good. It was so good.
My note is just Mal is a dummy and I love it. Like, he just storms out. He's like, I'm going to fucking kill. Mal can't stay on his damn feet. He gets fucking murked every time he steps into battle. He needs help.
I just want to go back really quick to what you were saying, Brian, because the fact that Kaz notices that Alina's tied up at her ankles is a big deal because General Kerrigan himself says no one's going to look at your feet, Alina, but he noticed right away.
There were two instances that were just such good for character building for Kaz. It was that, how he was the only one that noticed she was tied up. And later he was just like, I saw that necklace on a portrait of a queen in the little palace. Like, the amount of perception for him to commit that to memory is like Sherlock Holmes.
It's amazing. That's what when he saw through the trap door too, like all of that, he just put that all together. Kaz is the best.
it makes me like what Netflix is doing way more that in the books he's already established, because right now he's just, you know, he's got the qualities. He just hasn't blown up yet. Like IQ off the charts, you know, he's got the team around him.
He's fucking building street cred. Building street cred.
Yeah. This could be a conversation for another time, but I really do wonder now, at some point we're going to have to separate them. And I wonder if what it's going to be like. Is it just going to be like Game of Thrones, where I guess we'll just have different scenes with different storylines and they'll never converge again until maybe they'll do a convergence way later that'll be non-canon too? Because, I mean, it's not like it's going to be
in uncharted territory. It's not really worth guessing. I mean, because we have no knowledge of the source material. We don't know how it could possibly work out. But they're going to go back to Ketterdam next season, fuck shit up. I think we're going to see the rise of Kaz. He's going to take out Pekka, and then maybe
Pecker.
And then maybe Inej is going to be the connection, because she's all into the sainthood and serving for Alina, and Kaz is going to follow her or something along those lines. I could see that happening.
Yeah. They've also established each other as definitive allies. Like, they're good now. We're talking about Alina and Mal's storyline crossing to Crows, right?
Yeah.
I think they've just established this episode that they are allies and they could cross whenever they're near each other. Like, if Jesper sees Alina, he'll be like, oh shit, it's Alina. Like, let's do a mission together or whatever. You know, let's help each other out.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But definitely Inej, I agree, Luke, will be the connection with the sainthood.
Yeah. And to take us back, I do want to point something out here, because after that Mal scene, we go back up and it's Kerrigan telling Alina that he has no plans to destroy the Fold just because it's their best weapon. And tell me if I'm crazy, if any of you guys noticed this. In the background, we go by the steps of where the Fold was created, right?
Yeah, I had that. I was gonna point that out.
I loved that. It's just a quick flash of the steps where he blew up and did the whole Fold. And they just, no comment from him, not even a look. That was just subtle peace in the background. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, that was sweet.
I would love to have heard his like inner thoughts as he like saw that. He was like, oh,
this is where it fucking started. That must have been the dead center of it, you would assume then.
I was thinking that, and I was trying to figure out the pacing, because in the beginning we get whatever politician royal is on board saying like, how far in are we? We're 5 markers in out of, what was it, like 27 or something like that.
Might be even more than that. I think it was like 30.
So I would say they were way closer to the west side, because like the next scene is them emerging from the tunnel.
Yeah.
Which would make sense, because it all poured out of his back. So if he was there, it would go like, I don't know, whatever. We're nitpicking anything. Yeah, I just love that they had the fucking building there, or the ruins at this point. So Kerrigan, we find out his master plan is, nah, I'm not going to destroy the Fold. It's the greatest weapon we've got. And everyone's like, oh my God, like what, dude? We thought you were good. And just wore black all the time, always. What? Yeah. Then we get a cut smash to the dock in West Ravka, and we get General Slaton informing his right-hand man, like, okay, when they come, lead with diplomacy, like greet them as heroes, whatever. Then once they're officially docked, kill everybody on board, including the Sun Summoner. Like, I already gave the order once. Just because it didn't work, I'll give it again. Kill him, kill him, kill him. Mm-hmm. Then we go back to the skiff. It's emerging from this light tunnel. And Kerrigan, you know, gives Zoya the order to stop moving forward. And then he presents his big demonstration. And the fucker moves the Fold into Novo Krabirsk. And this was a big dick energy move.
It was.
This was big.
And did he extend it or did he move it? He said, because I heard him say later, I can move it wherever I want. So I wasn't sure on that, if he was actually pushing it out or if he was just moving the location of the Fold.
I think it was a movement, but that's your guess is as good as mine.
Yeah.
I assume he meant like extend it. He's not going to, like, there's a set max volume of the Fold. And if you push it a little this way, it's going to shorten that way. I figured he could just say fuck it and cover the whole continent if you wanted to.
Wait, so you just said extend it, but you mean move it?
No, extended.
No, he's saying,
I don't think there should be, like, if it lengthens this way, you shorten it over here.
Okay,
That doesn't make sense.
I took it as it was an extension, too.
I mean, it looked like it to me. The only reason why I asked because a little bit later he says, I'll move it to wherever I want, to any border I want.
Yeah.
Don't piss me off, pretty much.
And I am just really confused about small science versus magic, because I rewatched this scene like 7 times on the second rewatch, just because I wanted to see if he did clap his hands first, if he touched, and he kind of did. So technically this isn't magic. This is the small science from earlier. So I just feel like unless they explain it more, there's some inconsistency with how they portray magic.
No, I'm with you.
Yeah, I definitely feel you there. The only thing I did notice was that when he did anything with the fold, he started getting the veins of black going up his neck, and that was the indication of him using magic in the last episodes and not the small science. But
did he get the veins when he just extended it right here?
I thought he did for that. Did he not in that part?
I don't think he did. I thought it was only when he got stabbed. So again, that's just...
All right, I would have to check that again then, yeah. I mean, it's definitely confusing when it comes to Kerrigan, whether it's magic or small science. Mm-hmm.
So this next part here is when we go back down to the lower deck, and I think it's just... Isn't Mal's...
They're all there for now. And, there. Okay, well, like Kathleen said, like Kathleen was saying, he's saying, I'm stupid, I'll go. Because Kaz is saying that somebody intelligent wouldn't do that.
He's like, never said I was smart. And then Inej was like, yeah, Sam, I'm out.
I just love Kaz's like analytical skills being shown again, specifically here, saying, yo, this isn't like a TV show. You can't just go upstairs. Like, we have to think about his power level. He is the Dark General. He created, you know, like he knows all these things about him. And he said, like, escaping the fold and having a way off is the real priority. So he's the only one thinking rationally. And then that's when Mal goes upstairs and Inej says, fuck it, I'm going with him. Right. I just think I love that Kaz is always cool, calm, collected, just thinking the right way, thinking like an audience member.
Mm-hmm. I would have bet my life that Mal's attempt at Kerrigan was going to end the exact way that it did end when he said, I'm running upstairs. I'm like, have at it, bro. You got plot armor, so I'm sure you'll be good, but you're going to get fucked up.
I think that's definitely something I want to talk about in a little bit.
Biggest gripe of the episode is even with Mal's bravado, nobody would do that. That was dumb. You're an idiot. Or you could just like do it more subtly, like get around. I don't know. I was pissed.
I was so hype at the end of that speech. Like he literally was like, well, I'm not smart after being a badass. And then goes up there and does literally the dumbest thing. Like,
well, he just proved it. He's not. Yeah.
Just to jump back a little bit, right after Kerrigan does, you know, hit, what was it? East West Rafko with the fold. Zoya does come down and is like, holy shit. Like, what did I just see?
Yeah.
Kerrigan looks at her and then looks back. And Kerrigan is very familiar with her.
Yeah.
They used to bangy bang. So I assume he knew that she had family there and just didn't care. She was like, I don't care about your feelings anymore. I got Alina.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think we brought this up earlier, but she said that she volunteers for these trips specifically to visit her family.
Mm-hmm. Not anymore.
Not anymore.
And then Alina's saying, like, hey, like, why did you just kill everybody? Kerrigan's like, they were traitors who tried to kill you. This is retribution, which is kind of true, but not the whole town. Come on.
So he turns to the wealthy people that are on deck aboard this passage to, like, who came to see the demonstration. And he explains that with the power of the Sun Summoner, like, at my disposal, I now have the power to move the fold to any border I want. So is that ability dependent on his connection with Alina, do we think?
I almost took it like he was using her for the protection so that he could be in the middle of the fold to do it. Because if you notice, at one point, he says, pay attention, Alina, because you need to keep our protection up. You know, not just your protection, our protection. So I feel like he can always do it. But I mean, it contradicts the ending for, you know, I won't bring that up now, but there is a contradiction in that ending. But for now, we're thinking that if he's in the fold by himself, he's going to get attacked by the Volcra.
Which was a question I had earlier on, actually, which would he be safe from the Volcra? And that is a definitive no. They fuck him up, but he just can't die, whatevs.
I still think he... Like, they fucked him up, but I think he gained control of them somehow.
Well, that's the point. Yeah, at the end, he says, follow me.
Right, yeah.
That's what I meant when I was saying, you know, spoiler at the end. Mm. But at the time, that's what we have to think. We have to think that he at least thinks himself that he can't be in the fold without Alina. Mm-hmm. What other point does Alina actually have for him except to give him that protection? Or let him use the protection to give them the tunnel? Like, what else does it do?
Well, now she could be the direct rival to her, meaning like he only wants her dead so she can't stop him.
Right. Now if he's actually controlling the Volcra, he might be saying, I don't need you anymore.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because I honestly took it like, okay, You mold us together. I get part of your power. So now I can protect myself in the fold so that I can use my powers, my dark powers.
That's what I'm in. That's what I'm headcanon. Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was just so he could like shoot the fold somewhere to threaten somebody and then remove it permanently later on. But I mean, that makes complete sense, honestly, because he couldn't do it unless he was like in the shit. But right. I did think it was really cool how he does that. He turns around. He's like, all right, we're going to redraw all the maps.
Yeah, that was sweet.
It's all Ravka now.
So he demonstrates this ability to the wealthy, influential people and says, go back to your homelands. Tell them I have this power. There's no more war with Ravka. Like, don't fuck with us or you're getting folded. Yeah, it's called folded.
Ah, I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, get bent. Get bent.
hashtag folded.
That's not bad.
Yeah, you know, I try.
I do also like really loved as such a villain moment when he was like, who would oppose us now? I'm like, that's a villain ass moment. Yeah. A good one.
It could have been cherry on the top if as soon as Mal came up, he just sliced him and said, save him for later.
We'll use him to,
you know, keep the show going.
I mean, I honestly think one of my biggest problems with this episode was Mal's plot armor.
Yeah, I've been bringing it up all season. He has by far the most plot armor of any character in the show. And some of the times it's just not necessary. It doesn't like give him the hero moment.
Yeah.
He looks like a little bitch at the end of every single time because he loses.
Yeah,
totally agree.
I fucking love Mal. And I hated the execution of his big heroic entrance. Mm-hmm. Just right at the end of the speech, he just comes in, goes pachoo pachoo, and fucking heart rended immediately.
Yeah, as he should, because the heart renders are so overpowered sometimes. And just in that moment, he just gets destroyed like he should have, like Kaz told him.
So Mal gets handled. And then we go to Inej, who also came up on deck with Mal. But Inej went to Zoya and this heart render. Inej just screams at Zoya to get us the fuck out of the fold and engages in like hand-to-hand combat with this heart render who claims he doesn't need his powers to beat her, but he definitely does because Inej is a beast. And then we also get Jesper just has a really cool line where Kaz is like, whoa, dude, don't go up there. Like, we're outnumbered. He's like, only because I'm not in the game. And he just goes right up. I'm like, yes, Jesper.
Yeah, that was dope. They have the advantage only because I'm not in the game. So good.
Yeah.
Jesper is the freaking man.
I like keep going back and forth with all three of the crows. Every time one of them talks, it's like raises their stock every single time. Mm-hmm. They haven't failed yet.
Yep.
So Inej is scrapping with this heart render. They're mixing it up. And, you know, it's more or less a stalemate until the heart render uses his power. But then Zoya betrays him, knocks him off the skiff, and he gets swallowed by the fold. So
he gets folded, dude.
He gets folded. It was right there. Thank you.
how sweet was that? The hand-to-hand, the hand-fighting sequence in general is pretty great. And then there's this sweet slow-mo scene where Inej kind of throws the knife up in the air to free one hand and then takes it and then grabs it out of the air. And as she's going to stab, that's when he heart rends, just stops her in her tracks.
Arya Stark, if you will.
That's what I was literally just going to say.
Arya Stark went down. Dinesh threw it from down up. So it was reverse Arya Stark.
Amita, the actress who plays it, actually posted this video of her, like, I'm showing it for the people who can't. Like, look at her. She's dope.
Did see that.
She's doing it.
She's so good. The dedication was amazing.
I just think, I don't know if this is the right time to bring it up or not, but I just think the heart render thing is so tough to put on screen just because, I mean, why not just blow her heart up right away instead of fighting her?
I was telling Paul pre-podcast, it's easily the most inconsistently written power of the show. It's just so fucking overpowered. And then other times I think it's coming up a scene here when they kill all the nobles. The Heartrender does it like a second, murders like all these people right in front of them. And then they can't do it when they're fighting Mal. They can't do it when they're fighting Inej. They can't do it when they're fighting Jesper.
Mal makes sense, I guess, because he probably had those orders not to kill, and then Kerrigan gives him the order again to remind him. But Jesper, like you said, the Inej fight, both of them, they should have just lost in 2 seconds if you're just going to blow their heart up, stop their heart, whatever you want to do. Anything.
I will say this heart render, when he first got basically attacked by Nezh, says, oh, like, you think I need a special power to kill you? So I think in the beginning he was showing off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then he used his heart rending. But I do agree, as soon as he used that, just like explode her heart instead of like holding her there frozen for a little bit.
Unless, yeah, like,
there's something we don't know about.
I actually cringe when I see them do the heart render thing, because I'm like, what are they when they hold it? I'm like, what are they stopping? Are they like squeezing my heart? Like, are they squeezing my organs? Like, I feel it in my body. Like, so I'm like,
why? It's almost like they're using the force and stopping all of their movement. Like, I get that their heart, if your fucking heart is freaking out, it's gonna be hard to move, but like, you don't have to be frozen. I just thought it was a really weird, hard thing to put on screen, because you can't see any of that internal shit.
It's hard to adapt.
Yeah, I'd definitely be interested to see how she adapts it in the books, or how she writes it in the books.
Mm, yeah.
Which, by the way, is a good time to throw it in there. You know, the author made an appearance. So Lee was in the episode where Alina showed her powers, and at the end, all the nobles kind of came in and gave her hugs.
Mm.
She was the first one to hug Alina. So
that's cool.
It was a cool little cameo that they threw in there.
Okay. I like that.
She was very present and on set a lot, apparently.
Cool.
I saw a video, a pretty cool video, the first time she sees all of them in costume and she's like crying and stuff.
Oh, that's cute, Jimmy.
Super cute.
So the unnamed heart render, I feel like we have Nina, Fedyor, Ivan, and this guy that just got folded.
Yeah.
But the other three are named and important. But the other guy gets folded, and then Zoya starts to airbend them out of the fold. So they're on their way out of there, and this is right when Jesper emerges from the basement, and he takes shots at Ivan and Kiergan, both of whom are okay, but, you know, they're disoriented because it's like getting hit with a bulletproof vest. And while Kiergan is distracted, he actually has a nice cut attempt at Jesper, and Jesper gets saved by Kaz, which I appreciated. Mm-hmm. But while Kiergan is distracted, Inej, oh my gosh, how amazing was this? Kisses the knife and just whips it right at this dude, hits him right in the sternum, like, kill shot. Except not a kill shot, because he is a darkling.
Yeah.
I'll say probably the worst CGI in an otherwise perfectly CGI'd show is the knife coming out of the chest and the bad blood coming off it. Well,
I think it's supposed to be black.
It totally is, which, you know, we love. Anyone who listened to the coverage of The 100, every time a freaking Nat Bleda came on the spot, we were like, yeah, let's fucking go. But it was just the way it looked just very fake to me. But otherwise, a perfect CGI show. Everything, every shadow, everything was perfection for me.
Shadows better be good, dude, if it's called Shadow and Bone.
All the bones were good, too.
Yeah. If the CW could pull it off like 10 years ago, then Netflix can pull it off now, Black Blood.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Come on.
That's all I'm saying.
You think Kieran's a Nightblood? Jesus.
He is a Napolita.
How many powers does this guy need?
He's a descendant of Becca Bromheda.
Oh.
Babe.
Kerrigan's,
is that why she's so good looking?
Babe.
Can we put Becca in the bank, Hail Mary? Is that what that means? Yeah. And she got a name drop in the episode.
You better stop.
She'd win. I'd marry her, period. Anyway, Kerrigan saves himself. Paul, you mentioned that his blood turns black, so I feel like there must be a Horcrux thing going on, because that is magic that saved his life. Otherwise, maybe it's just like a power of his bloodline.
Well, that's what I was getting so confused. That has to be one of the new power up, because in the flashback, you know, he saw he was getting hit in the chest with arrows and he needed the healer, but now he can heal himself. So I guess it's some of that dark
shit. The only way he's going to be able to die is when Alina blows fucking light magic right into his face. Like, that's just it. I think I'm assuming pretty much any other way he's not going to die.
I'm a fan of the guillotine. That's usually pretty good for most people. That would be my first try.
I was going to say,
dig a hole, guillotine, put one half in the hole, the other half in another hole, cement on top. He's done. We're good.
Yeah. It upsets me that they're probably going to do some convoluted bullshit to finally kill him and not that, Jimmy. But I agree with you. If me and you...
We're all about the guillotines.
Yeah, all about the guillotines.
So let me ask you guys a question. I didn't get to be on the last episode. Did you guys discuss at all wondering who his father might be? Or do you think it's just like a rando and the bloodline goes through his mom?
Daddy Kieragan? No, we didn't talk about Daddy Kieragan.
Kieragan is Daddy Kieragan.
I'm getting hot and bothered thinking about Zaddy Kieragan.
Zaddy?
But yeah.
No, we actually never talked about that. Mm-mm. And honestly, how the hell did we not talk about
that? I mean, I'm just wondering, like, if his bloodline is immortal, and if it is, like, the mom and the dad are both darklings, then he should be around somewhere, unless he literally is just a rando and the mom just birthed a darkling and she's the bloodline.
I thought that maybe he could have been a descendant of the Bone Summoner, who was considered one of the first Grisha ever.
So Bagger hit the Bone Summoner?
Maybe.
And it's also, it seems like they are immortal to age, but they do die if they're, you know, guillotined and buried in two different holes. So maybe that's what happened to his dad, too.
I mean, Bagger, like, they did make sure in the last episodes that she has aged. Like, they did CGI or makeup her to make her look a little bit younger in the other episodes. Yeah. So I guess at some point they do have to age. Like, it's just way slower. I don't know. I just wanted to bring it up to you guys.
How fucking cool, though, is Kerrigan with the dark veins looking like a badass? And he goes, dude, it's going to take more than this. Throws the knife or just drops it, pulls in the fold, and then goes, just stay in the dark. Like, oh, God.
Yeah.
Badass.
So in the last episode, we find out that, or the last two episodes, we find out that Kerrigan starts using the quote unquote magic and create the fold once he was looking into the research of the Bone Summoner, correct? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I'm just assuming that in all these hundreds of years in between, he's just been balls deep in that research. And that's probably why he's like crazy immortal.
Yeah,
definitely. It has to be all that dark magic they talked about that feeds on them, not vice versa.
Well, he did say that all the research was in the archives in that one building, and that building is now in the fold. No.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
So I would say he probably didn't have at least that library of records available to him.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point. Unless there was a cool side quest where they go back in the fold and they're not showing us. But this pissed anybody else off that he pulls in the fold and then Inej is fighting this Volker that shows up throwing knives at it when it's supposed to be pitch black and just.
Well, again, I don't know if we have to. I don't think we can assume it's pitch black like the books. We just have to assume it looks to them like it looks to us at this point.
It pissed me off that this was the most polite Volkra ever and just like gently landed and backed her into a corner and sniffed her up and was able to be beaten off by a cripple. But other than that, no, totally made sense, bro. No, dude, anybody else, this thing would have came down, claws in its freaking bones and carried it off, and that's just dead.
He's a sweet boy. You don't know anything about those Volkra, bitch. There could be nice ones.
That might have been one of the children Volkras that were nice and just want to play, dude. But
even before that, when the Volker first comes in, knocks Zoya off of the six steps, and that's enough to knock Zoya out. She's out for the fight for a little bit. Can't squall. Did that piss anybody else off? Because it pissed me off. And like the same thing with Jesper. When Kaz tackled him to save him from the blade, Jesper like hit his head against the wall and got knocked out for like this little bit of the fight.
I think that's just the problem with the fact that the Crows and Alina and the Darklings story don't really mesh. So again, we don't know, but I'm just assuming that in the books, the Crows probably never messed with the Volkra or something like that. So they just have to figure out ways to get them to survive to the next scenes.
Yeah. Kaz gets highlighted a couple times here, just saving the day, which is fine. He's not a fighter, but it's fine. Just take it in stride. Let's keep going here.
So while they're there, this is where we get Alina's kind of surreal vision of the stag, who just kind of shows up on the deck like nobody else has shown. It's just her and the stag, and the stag kind of like nods at the knife that's on the ground next to her. And it's like, you know what to do. And Alina's like, yeah, I do now because of you. Thanks. And they high five. And then the stag gallops away. He was wearing like a snapback or something. I don't know. I don't know, bro. I'm getting out of hand. Someone stop me. But Kerrigan walks up. He's like, hey, Stag, get out of here. Like, Alina, remember me and you, we're evil together. It's all going to work out. Like, this is cool. And Alina's like, I never needed you. Boom. Stabs him right in the bottle cap that's on his hand.
With Nash's knife.
Yep.
Yeah.
So lit, especially because we shit talked it so much last time. We're like, oh, must be convenient for him to just put it on his hand where we have hers embedded in her chest. And I'm like, you probably fucking wish you put it in your chest now, you little bitch. You cannot claim what was not given to you. The stag chose me, bitch. Mic drop.
I normally would be pissed at something like that, but I just connect it so heavily to the Elder Wand from Harry Potter that I'm fine with it. I just accept it. like when they almost killed the stag in the woods, like it was on the like dying right there. I'm fine with it, but it was a little bit of a.
It was a vision. It wasn't an actual stag.
Yeah, well, no, the stag was real in the woods. Original stag
from the woods, like
right.
But I mean, Alina wanted made the choice to save it. Like that's what she wanted to do, and that well, Mal was saying, "I have you kill it yourself." But I'm pretty sure, at least in my head, her choice was to you don't have to actually kill it, right? That was what she was trying to save it.
Mm-hmm. She was going up and touching it and stuff like that, which. You know, this begs the question, when did the stag choose her? And she was having premonitions of the stag since episode one. So
and since she was little.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's birth.
Like you were born. Okay. That's what I was gonna say. She was legit the chosen one and like
the boy who lived come to die. Yeah.
I mean Voldemort didn't choose her and make her the chosen one in turn. She just was born the chosen one.
Yeah. Gotcha. And Kerrigan's like, dude, what the hell? You betrayed all of your people and then is about to kill her or maybe not kill her but about to do some dark magic shit and who shows up but our boy that's always on the ground Mal
Paul's boy
yeah I fucking love him I love him too I just hate how they made him on the ground all the time
it's just tough because he's just a dude like yes the attack and throwing him and Kerrigan off the boat I'm good with that saved Alina that was a hero moment like Luke was saying there's certain times where it's not needed I think that time was needed and then when they're throwing down I have a problem there because he should just get his head chopped off in 2 seconds but
no I don't have a problem there at all because
his hand's messed up
yeah that was Kerrigan, actually fine
Kerrigan punches him twice in the ribs Kerrigan punches Mal twice in the ribs in the same spot. And every punch, he looks at his hand. He's like, ow, what the fuck? And then he goes, ow, he goes, owie. And then when he goes to try to slice Mal, he does it, just misses Mal. And then he's like, holy shit, that hurts so fucking much.
Okay, so that's what, okay.
It. I enjoyed that.
Okay, so that's what that was. So he was saying, so his power was messed up because his hand was stabbed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, then I'm good with that too then. I just read it wrong then.
These are just two thirsty boys fighting in the sand for our girl. That's all it is.
That's hand true. To hand.
This exact moment is starting to get her organs slowly crushed instead of the fast heart render abilities, right? That's what's going on ship because she was going to jump down there and basically kick the shit out of Kerrigan probably.
Yeah.
So that she had to get who Ivan. Lined up Ivan's lined up against her, right?
Yeah, he's all pissed like how dare you betray our people and all that stuff. Like he gave you everything, remember your place. And Jesper comes in, shoot. And he doesn't shoot him in the pretty face, which is the worst.
I do like how he keeps saying that.
I couldn't shoot him in the pretty face. I gotta stop doing that. But this was another instance of like Jesper gets caught by Ivan, this dude who just wiped out 7 people at once in an instant. Why is Jesper so strong? He's able to like resist him for a little bit. And then like, I didn't get that either. Ivan has him. And instead of doing anything, he throws a punch at Jesper and Jesper like dodges it and then shoots him.
I have something I want to ask you guys. So from on the last episode, did you guys bring up the fact that and did you guys talk about when the one guy is throwing down with Jesper and he pauses and he says, what are you before he?
Yeah, we did.
Okay, so what'd you guys say? Because you think he's a Grisha?
I mean, we brought it up. We definitely talked about the fabricator thing going on. But
all right, cool.
And the hint later that episode where Inej is like, hey, she's talking to Kaz. Jesper fixed your cane, gives it back.
All right, cool.
But back to the Kerrigan Mal fight. This is when we get some badass wrestling moves here. We get some like flip. It kind of looks like a 619. I think it was Kerrigan that did it, right? He starts just kind of beating the shit out of Mal. And then when he has Mal in the, you know, the villainous stare down where he gives him a couple seconds to get his final words in.
That was sweet that he flips over. He jumped on the gun when Kerrigan threw the blade at him and acted like he got hit by it and was hurt. Yeah. Then when Kerrigan was slowly walking up, he just flips over, bang, 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 lights him up, but he runs out. And then, you know, his Kefka saves him. And Kerrigan's saying, like, I've lived for centuries. Did you really think you could kill me? And I don't have to kill you, Darkling. Your past will do it for me. Volker just come in, just nom, 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 nom.
Nom, 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 nom.
I was pissed because at first I thought he was dead and I was like that is a shitty way to go. I thought it was cool that they attacked him at first.
I didn't take
if he was out I would be considerably less interested in season 2.
Agreed.
My note is in quotes because I knew that was bullshit from right like the second I saw it. Like I knew that was not going to be the way he died.
Yeah, I feel like the end of the episode, it had to go that way. Yeah. Like it just can't not go that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now that we have Mal and Alina get reunited for the first time in a little bit here. And this is when all the Volcra start swarming them. And then she blows up with her son summoning. And that's kind of the end of that before we flash over to, I think that's kind of the end, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. We
go to the bonfire outside mm-hmm. the fold. I did like Mal's line. Don't you dare say meet me in the meadow. That's like a good callback. Yeah. But yeah, so the crows, Malina, that's Mal and Alina, for those Rook shows that are still watching, and Zoya have a bonfire outside of the fold. Inej is like fangirling over Alina being a saint. And this is where we get the connection because Inej just says, wherever you are, whenever, like, let me know, I am yours. Like, you have my services. And Alina plays it cool and like, it's just like, yeah, sure, kid, take this knife.
I do want to say, that part of her personality grew on me as it went on. Like I hated the religious aspect of her in the beginning, but her just pledging herself to Alina is kind of cool because she's just the ultimate badass shadow guard. Not shadow guard.
But. I was going to say the same, Inej pledging her loyalty to Alina is so dope, but like Alina giving her knife. And then the way Inej looks at her knife and says, I know exactly what I'm going to name it. Like the fact that she names her knives, I'm just like, is there any cooler person in the world?
Every single knife has a sweet name.
Name one. The name? I don't get it.
She didn't name it.
She didn't name it, but I just thought like in general, I loved the fact that she was so like particular about her knives. She really took care of them. So the fact that she has a name for each one makes so much sense. That tracks.
I totally love that too. And then when she's in the fold, she is just like throwing every single knife she has into the fold. And she's
like a pet, dude. I feel like if you name it, you're going to get upset when you lose it. I mean, she lost a couple of those knives in the fold.
I'm wondering if that's a callback to the books and maybe in the book series, she has a named knife and they just wanted to throw that in there for the readers.
Maybe
that makes sense. Yeah.
But this is also our Zoya redemption. So, I mean, we already had it. She saved Inej. But I love her line where I love when Alina hugs her because it's obviously Zoya's just like this fucking bitch. but she's like, I still don't like you. But I love the line where she says saints become martyrs before they become heroes. So stay alive because, you know, they're going to end up being on the same team at some point. And I just enjoy that because Zoya was fucking stupid the entire series. So I'm glad they flipped it. And again, I'm here for it. I'm like, yeah, girls. I'll give them second chances.
It's so funny because you take that. I took everything you just said the same. Like, I interpreted the scene the same way. I just, my takeaway from it is that was not deserved. And I fucking hate Zoya. What the hell? Like, she's hugging her. I thought that was dumb.
Well, I'm saying that Zoya hated the hug. But Alina is just like, you saved me. I need to like.
I don't think Alina should have hugged her.
Okay.
She was the one that went in. Alina was like, oh, blah, blah, blah. As you were saying, Kathleen, first thing she says is like, I still don't like you. And I was like, dude, fuck you, Zoya.
Alina should have been like, I still don't like you, but, you know, thanks for helping us survive. It should have been the other way around or something.
Alina just has her priorities straight now. She's got to save the
saint.
World.
She's a goddamn saint.
Yeah, I'm really happy
saint.
Zoya's bouncing because I don't care for her.
Wow, I didn't know this was going to be so controversial, this little interaction. I thought Zoya, this was an amazing scene for her. And also, you got to think, like, she was just backing the wrong horse. She was getting some good dick from the Darkling, and she was
just
following
that.
Doesn't mean
you gotta be a racist bitch to my girl.
True.
She's not redeemable because of, like, the situation she was in before.
I disagree. She's redeemable.
I mean, she is redeemable, but I don't think she's currently. She has not done enough for me to say.
Yeah, you're saying she's not redeemed,
right? She's not redeemed
for sure.
The only way to redeem yourself is for like half of your family to get killed. That means you're a shitty person. I feel like
I would say she's now a Grisha on the run with no concrete allegiances. So I think she is. She's now a free agent. Well, so I think she has the potential to become redeemed. And I think that's where we're headed. I don't think her part in the story is done.
Yeah. To continue with the rest of that scene, just because you said she's on the run right now, she is on the run, but she's going back to Novokuznetsk to see if there are any survivors.
She could have just Hari-Kari'd right in the fold, and I would have considered her redeemed. Just took a knife right to her stomach. I'm sorry, Alina. And then
it would still be in the fold if she did that, because she
needed
gets
to
them
spall
out.
Them out.
Oh yeah.
But Alina, they could have just hoofed it, like walked.
True. Just use the light.
So yeah, she's pretty expendable, I guess.
Yeah. I have a much more important thing to discuss, which is why haven't Inej and Kaz kissed already? Oh my God, the tension. That is going to be the best kiss of all time. I'm so excited. The way Kaz looks at Inej, you better stop.
And not that Inej needed another reason for me to like her more, but I love the pettiness of her saying, I'm literally going back to Ketterdam with you just to watch her face. I love that.
And then we'll see. I honestly do think that her doing the I'll go back with you and then we'll see. I think she's still going to stick with Kaz, and we're really not. My prediction will be that we're really not going to get her with Alina too much. Like, I don't think she's really going to be the guardian like all the time for Alina. I think she's still going to stay as a crow.
Yes, I agree.
I would agree with that too. We also kind of skipped over Alina giving Kaz the necklace. Well, first, Jesper says step one for any good plan is a new change of clothes, and gives them a new change of clothes, Mal and Alina, which I love. And he's just like, it's worked for me in the past. So, you know, keep it changing. But then he says pretty definitively that they're not going to hunt Alina anymore. And Kaz is a little bit hesitant, and he notes he doesn't agree or disagree, but he does look up at Alina and says, you are quite valuable, you know. And Alina takes this opportunity to hand him this just bejeweled necklace from the little palace. And he says, this isn't a gift for saving me. This is an exchange for not telling anyone who I am, that I'm part shoe, or where I'm going from here. So he did get his money, and he's going to parlay that into obviously selling the gemstones and freeing Inej from the menagerie.
One of those gemstones could pay off her debt. Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's a dope necklace.
Hell yeah. And I'm guessing that he'll get the Crow's Club back too. Mm-hmm.
If that is the reason why he is so rich, like he is in the books, that's phenomenal writing. That's very good.
Yeah. I'm also fine with that. Did also skip over the thing that where Mal tells, this happened a little bit before the whole Zoya thing. Mal promises to bring Alina back to the fold because they're sitting there looking at the fold and it was looking a little weak, which I guess it should be kind of. But they're going to come back into the future. I'm assuming there's going to be a time skip in between season one and two. She's going to train. Kaz is going to get more clout. And then there's going to be some event that happens as Kerrigan regains his strength. And then the whole goal of next season, I'm sure, is going to be to come back to the fold and destroy it for real.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys talk about how the Kefka burned?
No, we didn't.
Okay. Cool. Do we want to bring that up?
Yeah, we do. Because that was actually one of my clues, because Jesper verbalizes the thought, I didn't think these were going to be able to burn. They're made by fabricators. He would be like, fabricators are capable of making things that are flame retardant.
That's Mal that says that.
Are you 100% positive?
Yeah.
Yes.
Then I'm a bitch.
Okay. When you were like,
okay, well, now we're keeping that.
When you were like, there's a clue later on, I'm like, holy shit, I was looking for it.
So Mal puts the Kefka in the fire.
Alina does, but Mal's the one who says, I didn't think it would burn.
Damn, Tags, you had me too.
I'm a bitch.
I'm always looking for clues, man. I had you that Inej was a Shadowmancer in episode one. I had all of you.
Yes, yeah.
Including myself. Whatever.
All right, so the actual squad starts to leave after Zoya walks off to do her own thing, and we find out the crows are going to head back to Ketterdam. We did the whole thing about Inej's contract, and then we have the Nina flash two, and this is her final scene, right? In the ship that the crows, Mal and Alina, are about to board is where we get the final conversation between Mateus and Nina, who Mateus is now in the cell.
Mm-hmm. Maddie.
Yeah, so Nina's just allowed to give him a meal or whatever. She gets called up in like 3 minutes. So I guess the captain just let her see this prisoner that they have. And Matthias is immediately pissed. He like grabs her through the cage. And Nina's like trying to explain how she was between a rock and a hard place. And that, listen, if I let the situation be, they would have killed you on the spot. I bet on the justice system because I knew you would only get arrested. So certain death versus an arrest, I made the right call. But he's being really illogical and is not hearing any of it. And as they're having this exchange, another inmate who's in the cell over just interrupts and says, there's no trial awaiting us. Like, the only thing that's awaiting us is a dank stone cell where we're going to rot. We're going to this place called the Hellgate, which I guess is a city somewhere for prisoners. And Nina's just trying to plead and plead and plead that she'll fix this. And Matthias is like, yeah, okay, I'm done with you. And then she's off.
You broke my trust. You cannot fix this.
Fuck Matthias. Nina's the shit in this situation.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, I don't know, man. I can definitely see where Matthias is coming from. He was blacked out that entire time. He didn't see Nina defend him from Fedor and all this shit. If he was like raised from he was a baby to hate these people because they're going to trick you. They're going to they're deceitful.
They're witches.
Yeah, they're witches, which he does. He calls her a devil drusher or something like that.
Yeah, I got you, Paul. I agree with you on.
Should have just popped his heart then, been done with it. Cut the ties.
She did pop his heart emotionally, dude.
Did they bang bang?
I didn't believe it. I didn't buy into those two. He's too weird. Like, I can't.
You better buy into it because they'll definitely keep going.
They're end game.
Yeah, they're end game, dude.
All right. Well,
Maddie.
I was trying to think of a name. I couldn't get one.
Maddie.
How sweet was it when Nina walks up onto the deck and, you know, pans out and we see that our squad of the crows are coming in and Jesper's like, all right, so what did we learn? We learned that people with trains are evil. You can't kidnap a human sunbeam. And maybe greed is a poor motivator. The true prize is the friends you make along the way. And Inez is like, oh, thanks. I'm talking about Milo.
Yeah, baby.
Loved it.
I really hope they figure out a way to put Milo in season two, because you know he's just like a throwaway thing probably for season one.
Yeah, that's when you don't need to worry about consistency. It's just throw him in there as a fan favorite.
I mean, they brought him on for a second episode that he had no business being in, so you know, he's on their radar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just want to say that I think the wardrobe on this show is excellent. I'm a big fan. All eight episodes I was super in on anything they were wearing, especially Mal with like the popped collar and the different layers and scarves and stuff. I was like, come on.
Kathleen, I love that you brought that up, because I was thinking, man, you can see a character and tell where they're from just from their attire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, everybody from the little palace was all wearing the Kefkas. The Druskella just looked like nomads. Like, it was really cool to see the different attires.
I'm wondering if Jesper's actor, Kit Young, if he used some kind of glue to keep the angled hat on his head, because he's always got that sweet swag angle mm-hmm. of the hat.
Talk about swag. You are correct, sir. Mm-hmm. Yes.
We did miss one more thing here at the end, though, is just Kaz talking the plan about and bringing up Pekka again. And then we mentioned it earlier, but that's when we get the heart render. He says we need a heart render. And Nina's just coincidentally just looking right at them and listening it in. And also in the background, we do see that some of the, I don't want to call them peasants, just like the normal people walking around the boat, they're gossiping about the Sun Summoner and saying she's dead. So that's just good to know for world building wise that's going to spread. People are going to think she's not really alive anymore.
But she is a saint.
Yeah. So she's probably going to cause a movement to start happening.
Right. So Nina actually talks to the crows and says, are the rumors true? Is she actually dead? And Kaz says, well, I don't know about the rumors, but she is a saint, right? Mm-hmm. Isn't that what he says?
Every fucking time Jesper speaks, it's amazing. And they're talking about it, and Jesper's like, come on, dude. Kaz isn't going to just send us into a hellhole without a plan. Please tell me you have a plan. You have a plan, right? I don't care if it's a lie.
Yeah.
The best.
And then Kathleen, you get a little Mal and Alina moment here. Yay, love, flashback. Woo.
I love it.
Fuck yeah. But then, fuck yeah, at the front of the ship.
The best scene of the episode, arguably, is we have the fade out after the Melina.
Okay.
Have we not said that?
No, we have.
Okay,
we have.
Cool. And then it goes back to the fold, and just as we all probably predicted, if you're a good TV show watcher, you knew this motherfucker was coming. Kerrigan was going to rez out of the fold, and he just has the most badass follow. And then these shadow monsters. are they shadows? Are they shadows part of the fold, or do we think they're Volcra that can?
I took it as they're Volcra.
I took it as Volcra that he surrounded with the fold, the darkness, so they can actually walk out and be in the light.
That seems like a leap, but I love it.
They did have claws and shit, and they can't touch the light because they'll disintegrate. So
I didn't know, is it the actual light or is it Alina's light?
Well, actual
light. Like, I guess the point is they can't leave the fold, so.
Luke, I was with you. I thought they were like extensions of the fold itself, not the Volcra, only because the Volcra couldn't survive outside. But they easily could explain why they can't survive, Paul, just like you did in 2 seconds. So I'd be fine either way.
But I was thinking what you guys were. Maybe he did pull out some magic, use the darkness to create these warriors, killed the Volcra, and that's how he got out. But, dude, that fucking scar is so sexy.
Dude, he's the best. Kiergan makes this show.
Mm-hmm.
He's so needed. And they couldn't have continued a season two without the face of someone evil past this object that is the fold. Like, they needed him.
Kathleen was texting me as she was watching it, because I was the only one that watched. And at the end, she was like, he's still alive. And I was like, hot boy's back, dude. Thank God.
Literally at the same time, he was like, hot boy's back. And I was like, sexy with them scars. You're killing it. The chemistry was on, Paul.
He's the best.
Yeah, so truly.
I only had two other things that I wanted to talk about that we haven't already brought up, because I think we did a good job of covering pretty much everything. But the two quick things I wanted to say were, I don't necessarily think I loved them just so easily killing off the commander of the First Army's Latan, because it just seemed like they were doing such good, subtle background political world building just throughout the season. I guess that's done. I guess that's no longer going to be a threat going forward, because the face of the First Army's dead. I don't think anyone on West Ravka is going to now decide we're going to war with the Grisha still because of this whole event that happened. So I don't know. That fell a little flat for me, because I was loving the buildup of the potential Caterdam politics that could follow with Zlatan being the leader.
Well, that's totally all you, because Luke loves any higher ups talking about political strategy. Mm-hmm. Like, if there is a scene with like kings around a table talking,
it's the best.
Luke is rock hard.
Oh, the Witcher, bro. When the witches talk, man. And then the only other thing I wanted to say, I think me and Jimmy were talking about it a little bit before, but the heart renders are just unbelievably inconsistent in how they're written. And I guess that's just it's a problem of just adapting the source material. So I don't really put blame on the show for that.
So Luke, I do want to actually talk a little bit more about the political powers that be in this show, because we skipped over a kind of low key line by Zoya, but Zoya, right before she left, instructs Alina that she cannot stay in Ravka because the apparat is going to try and keep his power by blaming this incident on all Grisha, and she believes that the people are going to turn on them again, just like they did in the wake of the creation of the fold. So I think we're going to have some political strife. I think Kiergan's going to emerge from the fold and try and go back, and won't really have any more political clout because the apparat has kind of usurped the throne from the king. So I think we're going to have a Grisha versus Ravka faction even within East Ravka. I'm not sure how it's going to play out, but I think we're going to have plenty of political strife still going on.
Yeah, you're right. I actually do like that. And is the king dead or is he sick?
I take it as he was on his deathbed.
Because they said he was sick and he was running it in his place. Okay.
Yeah, they didn't confirm it, but I assume he's on his way or dead.
I also really want to see more of Fjordan and Shuhan, because so I think there must be two very, very defined geographical borders to the north and south of Ravka, because in every map I see, there's like a mountain range to the south. That must be like a really imposing thing to try and cross to get from Ravka to Shuhan. And then to the north, they keep on bringing up how it's covered in permafrost, the border. And I would just like to kind of explore these different cultures, because the world building is very good. They're kind of setting up these very different cultural factions, and Caterdam looks very unique and different to Ravka. So I would like to explore what Fjordan has to offer and what Shuhan has to.
Well said. I agree.
Thank you.
I have a few questions. I have three questions that I'm dying to know the answer to. So one is Ivan alive? We saw Jesper shoot him, not in the face, off of the skiff and into the fold, but we didn't see, like, why wouldn't he just shoot him in the face? Maybe he got eaten by Volcra. Maybe he booked it with Kerrigan, but I doubt it.
I took that as he shot him in the neck. It was still a kill shot, but he avoided the face.
Oh, okay. That makes a lot of sense.
Either way, he's not getting out of the fold. I just think there's 0% chance.
Yeah. I thought it was just weird that he was such a big character and they didn't show his death. But if you're saying they showed him getting shot in the neck,
I think he's dead.
Yeah. Okay.
There's going to be some fallout because they did establish the relationship between Ivan and Fedor. And Fedor is definitely a talented Grisha.
And he was deeply in love with Ivan.
Yeah. He's going to be a scorned man for sure.
Yes.
My other one is, what caused Kaz to be so full of vengeance? Like, what happened to him that Jesper had that line earlier this episode? Like, oh, like, you've seen that face in the mirror before, haven't you?
We know it has to do with Pekka. Yeah. With Pecker, but we don't have any further details yet.
They gave us enough hints that it seems pretty confirmed that if it goes long enough, we'll get that answer.
Yeah. And maybe, I'm assuming maybe it has something to do with his leg, and that's why it's permanently damaged.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one, this is more of a, you know, speculation. Do you think, high vibe, guys, do you think that Matthias, like, this could be the turning point to make him into, like, the most brutal witch hunter ever?
His villain origin story?
That would be really cool. I don't think it's going to go that way, but how sweet.
I would love it.
How sweet would that be? Because he's,
it would,
like,
make him cooler.
Yeah, that would be cool. I still do think that Natty is endgame, so I think that they'll be together and they'll make it through somehow.
I always want to add a question now at the end because I just thought of this. I asked this at the probably in the middle, one of the middle podcast episodes, but any chance that Mal is a Grisha, or are we so far removed from that?
Dude, I'm
I say no.
I
think the fact that they haven't shown him get tested, it's just a
just
huge,
feels like he brings almost nothing to the table besides his cheekbones and like Paul's lust and love.
Yeah, he won me over, so he's bringing something. I just think the fact that he was just on the ground all the time is what makes people think he's garbage, because he kind of was garbage. But season two, redemption arc, I'm calling it.
Cool.
I don't. The only thing that I've noticed that's weird about him power-wise is that he gets that ringing that he hears when certain times when he's near Alina and when he was near the stag. And I'm wondering if that has anything to do with some kind of power that he has, whether it's something, his connection to Alina, or if he is a Grisha. I really don't think he's a Grisha, but I think that there is a reason that they keep playing that noise whenever there's some kind of connection with power between him, Alina, or the stag.
Just love, baby.
Power of love? That, I mean, that's fine.
All right, that's all I got. Anyone else?
The only thing I have to say is that, well, actually, first it is a question. Do you guys think that now that Kerrigan survived season one, do you think he's endgame?
Endgame villain or endgame to turn good?
No, endgame villain. Like, do you think him and the Fold are the end of this show or story?
Yeah. Yes.
Definitely.
Okay, good. That's what I was hoping for, because I was going to say that if the Fold or Kerrigan was gone after season one, then I would have been way upset.
Yeah, agreed. No, I think that's got to be the end. Because what's the point? You're going to rebuild up a whole new villain to... It's going to be like a 3 or 4 season show. You feel like it's a Netflix. That's kind of the route they usually take now. I don't think there's time. I think you just use the shit out of that amazing actor, the Darkling.
When it comes to the Fold, do you think, like, now that he can go in there, do you think, like, he might have, like, his headquarters in there or something? Like, that will be his domain? I feel like the Fold needs more. Like, I feel like it was so built up and I was so into it. And then, like you were saying, kind of, Luke, they got through it and it just didn't seem ominous enough to me. But if he could, like, make that his domain or something, then I would love it a lot more. I don't know.
Well, using it to create a shadow army seems like a good enough extension of it as well. If he's just pulling from the physical Fold itself to create these, like, animal warriors, whatever they are, I'm in with that too.
Yeah.
So I think the question we all ask ourselves at one point is, what Grisha would you be?
I'd be a Heartrender. I love it.
I think there's some out there that the show didn't introduce us to, because, like, isn't Tidecaller, they said that once, but they never showed us one.
Yeah, I think there's more than we've seen.
And I've seen some symbols from, you know, the Reddit. There's other ones, like an alchemist or something like that.
So are you saying we can't be a shadow summoner? Or is that it included?
Hey, if you want to be a shadow summoner, be a shadow summoner.
I'll be a shadow summoner over a heart render.
I don't know how that's going to affect your everyday life. How that's going to benefit you.
I like Taylor's.
You would be a tailor, Luke. You make yourself even prettier. That's tough.
I just like the applications of a tailor. Opens the door to so many things.
Well, are we saying we're in their world or we're in our world, Paul? Now you're getting me a little like...
Our world.
Our world? Okay, then I'd definitely be a heart render.
Yeah.
I was thinking...
Or I'd be a tailor and I'd just be Instagram famous.
Influencer.
I was thinking Fabricator, man. Fabricator's so cool. You just move random shit.
All right, let's get this to the final Bang Kill Mary of the season.
Okay, let me pitch this to you guys. Okay, so the Bang Kill Mary I have in mind today was involving six people. So we have the Crows, Inej, Kaz, and Jesper. And then we also have the three... damn, it's not non-Grisha. Anyway, we're going to keep it with the six. Nina, Alina, and Mal. So we have the Crows, Nina, Alina, and Mal. And we're going to do... Two of them have to kill each other, two of them have to bang each other, and two of them have to marry each other. And it could be any, it could be literally any. And bang, I can start right. If you want.
Give me that list again.
The Crows, Nina, Alina, and Mal. And I can start since I've been thinking about it. So I am going to have Inej and Kaz marry each other because obviously the love is there. I am then going to have Mal and Jesper bang it out because doy, hot boys, come on. And then third, I'm going to, honestly, they can just battle it out. I don't really care. Nina versus Alina. I guess I'll have Alina kill Nina only because I guess my loyalties lie with Alina. But
this one actually gets kind of tough once you have to think about the kill.
I got mine.
Go ahead.
So I'm going to let Nina and Jesper bang each other. I'm sorry. I'm going to get... No, that was right. I'm going to have Nina and Jesper bang each other because they're both just stupid hot. And they're like my two favorite characters in terms of just like overall personality, humor, etc., etc. So those two are going to bang. I'm going to have Kaz and Inej marry because I think there's a love there. There's a good chemistry and I think they'd be happy together. And I'm going to kill Alina and Mal.
Damn.
Because they're just the obvious love, you know? I like, they've been spoon feeding me Alina and Mal since episode one. And it's, I'm in. I approve of the ship, but I'm bored of the ship already.
You have to pick one to kill the other.
Yeah, you have to pick one to kill the other.
Alina, kill Mal because Mal would never kill Alina.
Yeah.
All
right. I can go. I think we're going to round this out, everyone. I mean, maybe not, but I'm saying that Inej and Kaz are getting married. Okay. Just for the same reason everyone else said, I'm going to have to let Alina and Mal bang it out because Jesus, that sexual tension has been going for years and years and years. You got to let them bang it out. And then my boy Jesper is going to take Nina out just because Jesper can't die for me. So He's taking her out by default.
So I took this a little bit different. I'm definitely going to have Alina kill Mal because, come on, have you listened to me at all on this podcast? So that's just the first thing that happens. And we're in a progressive parallel world where there's no real sexual orientation. Everybody will fuck anybody. It doesn't really matter. So with that being said, I'm actually going to have Kaz and Jesper marry because those are my boys. And I think they're going to live a happy life together.
Okay.
Leaves Nina and Inej to bang. And I actually like that it ended up being like this because I think their personalities would be so fun to watch bounce off each other. Just the complete charismatic Nina and then just like the dark badass Inej. I just think
that'd be
a fun bang.
Yeah. Nice.
While they're twirling in the circus string things that Inej does. I don't know.
Kaz and Jesper banging it out is perfection.
No, Marion.
Oh, Marion. That's even better.
Oh,
so
yeah.
They can bang every day.
Yeah, they're going to run the what's it called? The barrel? Or the counterdam? Yeah.
Okay, so mine starts out pretty normal. Mal and Alina married. Paul's big loser because he believes in true love. and then I'm going to have Kaz kill Nina. So this is where it gets a little weird because that means I have Inej and Jesper banging and they're like best friends. You don't really see it, any, you know, sexual tension in the show together. But hear me out. Jesper bangs all the time. That's a lot of experience. And they would have a fucking phenomenal night.
Oh, God.
Okay. Damn. All right. So I guess we got final thoughts on the show because we're not going to be back for, you got to assume, a year and a half at least. And we don't have any news yet as of this podcast that it got greenlit, right?
which is pretty surprising.
It's a lot of CGI, so it's probably expensive, but it is like still in the top 10. I think they got the audience for it is what I'm saying. So I would be surprised. Most shows do not stay this relevant for this long, and I always see it still being pushed on Netflix. So I think they like it. They also shelled out a lot of money. I've read a story. They only wanted to buy the rights to the Alina storyline, but they cashed, you know, they forked over the dough to buy the Crow storyline. So I think they're pretty invested in this saga. And I'm excited because I think it's a good one. I think it's a story worth telling. And I haven't seen a lot of complaints from the Grisha fan base about the changes that they're making.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think it's going to get a nice following. It's just came at the right time at the end of COVID. Everybody's watching it. Not really seeing any supremely negative takes on the show as a whole. Sure, you can nitpick anything, but I just think where we're going, it's going to be fun. And I'm really expecting a nice time skip to start season two if we get it. And we're just going to have some subtle character growth, but they're all going to be badass. I think Alina is going to be a lot more badass in season two, having trained with her powers and stuff like that. And Kerrigan's just going to be full villain, full murdering people. And that's going to be really fun to watch because that was deserved.
Yeah, like I said in the intro, very, very, very pleasant surprise. I mean, we had this off our radar to the maximum. Literally no idea the show was even coming out until Brian said something. Didn't even know what the Grishaverse was, but I'm glad we got into it. Again, I just want to thank all the Facebook groups and the Reddit people just making everything so much more fun with all this collaboration. Hopefully we'll see you guys in a year and a half or so.
Hell yeah. That is a wrap on Shadow and Bone season one. I just have to reiterate, thank you, thank you, thank you to the Grishaverse following. You guys have been great. You're why we do it. And, you know, this has been a really, really fun one that none of us knew going into it. So thank you for the support. We'll see you in season two. As always, if you like what you heard, give Bingetown TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram. Visit us on BingetownTV.com and subscribe to our show on Spotify, the Apple Podcast app, or wherever else you may find your podcast. Once again, we are Bingetown TV, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.